ponder on the fact that why she asked to be buried
secretly. That's right.
Was it out of her dissatisfaction with the first two caliphs?
Yes.
If yes, so okay. How we justify this dissatisfaction, especially as Sunnis, those brothers and sisters of mine who are listening to me, they may refer to their sources to see about such narrations that I will share some of them.
That's right.
And think about the fact that why Lady Zahra Salamullah alayha was not happy with them.
But before that, we must know that according to Shiite theology and Shiite beliefs, the place of the burial of the descendants of Prophet Muhammad and the Aimmas is important to them, okay?
Sure.
Maybe some of the listeners might think that why are we discussing at all the grave of a person? It is a piece of a stone or a wood or something like that, okay?
Yeah.
So this place is the holiest place, maybe the holy, okay? After Kaaba for the Muslims.
Of course, the holy shrine of the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt and infallibles, including Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha, are holy places for all Muslims. But second of all, for famous people among the Sunnis, almost we know the exact grave of all the great companions of the Prophet.
Yes.
Even those who were not that well known in the history of Islam. So when it comes to Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha, for sure, all Muslims should ask this question, where is the burial place of her?
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir. Inshallah, inshallah,
inshallah, you'll find your way. Now, there are some points that show that Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha made this will to show her policy, to show to Muslims during the whole history of Islam that she was not happy with some of the decisions of so many companions of the Prophet who usurped the right of caliphate from her holy husband, Imam Ali alayhi salam, and did not allow him to be the first caliph after the Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family. According to one narration in some of the Shia sources, Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha, when she was in her deathbed, she said that I swear by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that I do not like your world and I hate some of the men among you, and woe be among them why they did not give the right of wilayat and guardianship to Imam Ali alayhi salam. It shows that she is not happy with the current situation.
Yes.
And according this has been mentioned in Ayyan al-Shia, volume 2, page 469. According to a narration in Biharun Anwar, volume 43, page 206 and 7, specifically Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha mentioned the names of some of the people that she did not want them to be present in her burial ceremony.
Okay. As a sign of complaint, maybe.
Exactly.
Or and protest against the current power of the time.
Exactly.
That's right.
Okay. And regarding her, unhappiness about the companions of the Prophet, I will share some narrations from some Sunni sources as well. And again, according to Manaqib ibn Shahrashub, volume 1, page 504, again, there is a narration according to which Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha, of course, according to this narration, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam was asked why Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha was buried at night and secretly. And the Imam said that because she made a will that I do not want such and such people to pray over my dead body.
Okay.
And
sorry, before getting to more reasons, do we have any guesses or conjectures regarding the place of the burial of Lady Fatima Zahra?
Yeah, there are only some guesses, as you rightly
and
mentioned.
What are they?
The main are the, there are three, the cemetery of Baqi, but not exactly where. the house of Imam Ali and Lady Zahra Salamullahi Alayha and the mosque of the Prophet Masjid al-Nabi.
Rawzat al-Nabi, what about Rawzat al-Nabi?
Yeah, I'm talking about the same place in the mosque of the Prophet, which is known as Rawzat al-Nabi.
Yes.
But no one knows because Imam Ali Salam, according to some narrations, he dug, 40 places as a grave for Lady Zahra Salamullahi Alayha not to be known.
Okay.
So whoever claimed that I know the place of the burial of Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha, he or she is nothing but a liar. Especially nowadays, we have some false claimants about Mahdism. They have claimed that we know the place of her burial, which shows that it is an indication and a sign of them being liar. Because when Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha made such a will, it means that she meant so. So no one has the right to reveal her burial place. And there is a story of Ayatollah Marashi Najafi that, he was looking for, he wanted to know the exact place of the
burial. As a historian and a researcher on history,
And also, he was asking for the grave of her mother. He is a Sayyid.
Yes.
And according to some reports, he was told in a dream that, it's not going to be happen. Mm-hmm. No one can know that. It's only after the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam. But instead, you may go to visit the grave of Fatima Mahsuma salamun alayha in the city of Qom.
And we know that so many people who are after visiting the tomb of Lady Fatima to Zahra, they cannot do that. In fact, we can say it is not possible. So they come here in the holy city of Qom and visit the shrine of Lady Fatima al-Masuma.
Definitely.
With the same name with Lady Fatima al-Zahra. That's right.
Now, talking about some of the Sunni sources which talk about this fact, let me share some narrations in this regard. According to At-Tabaqat al-Kubra, volume 8, page 18, it's been mentioned that Imam Ali alayhi salam buried Lady Zahra salamun alayha at night, in accordance with the will of Fatima al-Zahra salamullahi alayha. Also in Sahih Bukhari, which is the most authentic collection of hadith according to our Sunni brothers, volume 1, page 177, Imam Ali alayhi salam buried her at night and did not allow the first caliph to be present in that ceremony.
That's right.
Let me also share what Ibn Abi al-Hadid, the famous Sunni scholar, has said in this regard. He says that وَالصَّحِيحُ عَنْدِي أَنَّهَا مَاتَتْ وَهِيَ وَاجِدَةٌ عَلَى أَبِي بَكْرِ وَعُمَرَ وَأَنَّهَا أَوْسَدْ أَلَّا يُصَلِّيَ عَلَيْهَا.
Okay.
This is in his famous commentary on Nahj al-Balagha, volume 6, page 50. He says that the true viewpoint with me or in my eyes is that she passed away while she was angry with the first two caliphs, and she made a will that they have no right to say the death prayer or funeral prayer over her body.
So in this way, in the history, when the people cannot find the exact burial place of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, they ask for the reason.
Exactly.
So the reasons now is the, we can say, complaints about, as you said, the current power of the time over there, okay?
Exactly.
Okay.
And Sahih Bukhari is very explicit in saying that Lady Zahra Salamullah alayha passed away while she was angry with the first caliph.
Mm-hmm.
And no one can, make any doubt regarding this narration in Sahih Bukhari, hadith number 2862. Bukhari writes, فَغَضِبَتْ فَاطِمَةَ بِنْتُ رَسُولِ اللَّهِ. Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha became angry with the first caliph, فَهَجَرَتْ أَبَا بَكْرِ فَلَمْ تَذَلْ مُهَاجَرَتَهُ حَتَّى تُوَفِّيَتْ. So she left the first caliph while she was angry, and she was in the same condition till the time she passed away. This is also mentioned in Musnad by Ahmad ibn Hanbal, hadith number 25. So, according to another narration in the book Al-Imama wa Siyasa by Ibn Qutaybah, the first two caliphs went to Lady Zahra Salamullah alayha somehow. Some believe that they wanted to ask for forgiveness, but Lady Zahra Salamullah alayha did not pay attention to them. And then he says that فَإِنِّي أُشْهَدُ اللَّهَ مَلَائِكَتَهُ أَنَّكُمَا أَسْخَدْتُمَانِي. I make as witness God and his angels that you two made me angry, and I'm not happy with you till I meet the prophet, my father, and I will complain against you to my father.
That's right.
So we are only quoting from Sunni sources.
Yes.
And as I mentioned, according to some narrations, Imam Ali alayhi salam made different graves, like according to some narrations, 7 graves or 40 graves, so that people may not know the exact place of Lady Zahra salamullahi alayha.
That's
and
right.
There are different opinions, as I mentioned, either yes. It is in Baqi or the house or Masjid Nabi, but these are just theories.
Mm-hmm.
Inshallah, after the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, he will yes. tell all the people around the world about the exact burial place of Lady Zahra salamullahi alayha. Again, let me repeat the fact that although we believe in the fact that Lady Zahra salamullahi alayha was not happy with the first two caliphs, but now our duty, according to the Shia scholars,
yes.
Is not to curse, is not to disrespect those yes. people who are respected by our Sunni brothers yes. and sisters.
Yes.
And at the same time, it doesn't mean that we can ignore the history. No, this is a reality, this is a fact in the history. But because of the fact that they are respected by our Sunni brothers and sisters,
that's right.
because of the fact that our great scholars have asked the Shia to do so, we never disrespect, especially these caliphs who are respected by our Sunni brothers and sisters.
Thank you much, Sheikh Halimi, for a nice elaboration regarding the secretive burial of Lady Fatima Zahra and why her burial place is not still known to the Muslims and her lovers all across the world. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs on Arab English Radio, Call of Islam page. For more information, visit our website, parstoday.com/EN, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanillah.
Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Inna fil jannati nahran laban. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan. Li Aliyin wa Husayn. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
It was a referendum that would change Britain's future forever. 52% of those who turned out to vote in 2016 chose to leave the EU, setting to motion years of negotiations and changes to laws and legislation. The man championing the cause, Nigel Farage.
We will be leaving this prison of nations at the end of January. And we won't become a third country, as I've been hearing this morning. No, we're going to become an independent, self-governing nation.
A nation that voted in Brexiteer-in-chief, former Prime Minister Boris Johnson, to power, who promised an oven-ready post-Brexit deal with the EU and prosperity for Britons. 6 years on and 5 prime ministers later, The country is facing an economic downturn, expected to last until 2024, and a de facto general strike by public sector workers over pay and conditions.
Small and large businesses up and down the country have been feeling the impact of Brexit in different ways, from added paperwork on borders to shortages of labor. In October, a Confederation of British Industry report said that three-quarters of UK companies have been hit by labor shortages in the past year.
Since the new Brexit rules took effect at the start of 2021, EU nationals no longer have the freedom to work in the UK. Instead, a new points-based immigration system has been implemented to attract skilled workers. Marlies Hazelton has lived here for nearly 40 years.
I can't even get citizenship, and it feels a bit like an insult, because I'm part and parcel of this country, really. I'm part of the furniture, and I've lost that sense of home.
The UK's withdrawal from the EU has also impacted the country's trade. After the pandemic, trade in almost all G7 nations has been recovering. The one exception is the UK, thanks to the Northern Ireland Protocol.
You can compare Britain with what's going on in Europe, you see, because they've also suffered the Ukraine shock, they've suffered that. So we can look at the data and see how Britain is doing relative to the average of those EU countries that are most similar to us. And it's those statistics that show that the British economy is 4% smaller, investment about 10% smaller than it would otherwise be.
The predictions for next year's GDP growth show a similar story. According to the OECD predictions, the British economy is not likely to grow in 2023. It's estimated to perform worse than advanced economies like China, Canada, and Japan. Even developing nations such as Indonesia are ahead of the UK. And one country below Britain is Russia, which is currently under heavy economic sanctions. As Britain faces a winter of discontent on a par with the one in 1978, it's become increasingly more evident that it's Britain that risks becoming the lame duck of the G7 due to Brexit and Brexit alone. Saeed Purza, London.
Fuel prices have slightly dropped in Yemen after the release of two Yemeni fuel ships that were detained by the Saudi-led coalition earlier this week in the Red Sea. The Yemeni army issued a stern warning to Saudi Arabia and the UAE that if the ships were not released soon, military action would follow. Yemeni bus and motorbike drivers in the capital Sana'a, who make a living from public transportation, welcomed the lowering of fuel prices. They say this is going to help them cope with the fuel price hike caused by the blockade.
As you can see, I am pumping 1 liter for only 500 Yemeni rials, whereas before it used to cost us 1,500 to 2,000 for 1 liter.
The Saudi-led coalition who are seizing Yemeni fuel ships do not respond to peaceful dialogue. They only respond to us when we decide to use our military power, and if that's the case, so be it.
Yemeni political expert says the release of the fuel ships by the Saudi-led coalition isn't enough, as Yemen will continue to struggle until Saudi Arabia and its allies completely lift the blockade and end their illegal involvement in Yemen.
Although the price of fuel has slightly dropped, we still need to look at the more pressing issue, and that is the fact that the Saudi-led coalition is still occupying Yemen. We need to reach an ultimate solution that can only come through taking decisive military actions against them. This is the only solution.
Despite falling oil prices, tensions are rising on all active battlefronts in Yemen for what could soon be a resumption of war if a political solution is not reached soon. This as Saudi Arabia and the UAE continue their militarization of strategic Yemeni islands in the Red and Arabian Sea.
The release of Yemeni fuel ships by the Saudi-led coalition marks a big victory for the Yemeni government based in Sana'a and to the people living in the areas controlled by Ansar Allah. This also indicates that Saudi Arabia and the UAE simply cannot afford to have their oil industry targeted by Yemeni ballistic missiles, which is why they chose a safer option by releasing the fuel vessels. Yusuf Mawadi, Sana'a.
...2022 has been dominated by a cost-of-living crisis, and the figures are staggering. Inflation is running at a double-digit pace, the highest in 40 years, and far outpacing wage growth. While food prices have shot up almost 20%, and the cost of heating a typical home has jumped more than 150%. As temperatures plummet below zero and desperation rises, key sector worker unions have launched mass strike actions to pressure the government to force wage rises.
The people who are out here on strike today are the same people who not only worked through the pandemic, we worked for the people, we'd get their prescriptions, we'd get their milk and bread.
We just want a pay rise in line with the cost of living. At the moment, what we're getting is actually terms of a pay cut. So it's not even in line with inflation. Everything's gone up. We're just like everybody else. We're all struggling.
This is not about pay. This is about our jobs.
The situation has become so dire in Britain that many families will have to choose whether to heat their homes or feed their families this Christmas.
It is very distressing. It's a situation which, in a way, unimaginable for a country which is supposed to be one of the richest countries in Europe and in the West. Why is it we have these extremes of poverty? Why are people, some people, forced to choose between heating and eating? I mean, there's something completely wrong about our system. We should be plugging and supporting and promoting equality and, you know, not oppressing the poor. You know, there's something which says a lot about our political system, which is flawed.
The government has pinned much of the blame on economic recovery from the COVID era. However, critics say its ruling Conservative Party incompetence and leadership instability that has also left the economy in a dire state. A lesser discussed reason for a European-wide crisis is the ongoing Ukraine war. Britain has remained a staunch supporter of continued fighting, even upping its shipments of arms and financial support.
I think the first is ensuring that we deliver more military aid and that military aid evolves to meet the situation that we're now facing. And that means more air defence systems, it means artillery, it means armoured vehicles. For our part in the United Kingdom, we've pledged to match or exceed the £2.3 billion in aid that we provided this year, next year.
Low wages, higher fuel costs, inflation and major strike action have all marred 2022. Does the government have what it takes to resolve these many issues in 2023? Probably not. It's going to be a long road with most likely higher taxation, major cuts in public spending and renewed pressure on an already struggling British working class. Robert Carter, London.
The PTI lawmakers did not appear before the Speaker of the National Assembly for the confirmation of their resignations, which they tendered in April, following the ouster of former Prime Minister Imran Khan through a vote of no confidence. While responding to a letter written by the top leadership of Khan's party on December 15, the Speaker of the Parliament, Raja Parvez Ashraf, called PTI's MPs to appear one by one in his chamber for the legal exercise under the rules of procedures and conduct of business in the country's National Assembly, terming it as another U-turn of Imran Khan in his political career. The lawmakers belonging to Treasury benches criticized the policies of the PTI party chief, saying that agenda of the former Prime Minister is only to politically destabilize Pakistan.
The Speaker of the National Assembly, through a written letter, asked the PTI lawmakers to come and complete the constitutional requirements for their resignations. But the PTI leadership is using the move as a political stunt. Actually, they are not ready to resign from the parliament.
While defending his party decision, the PTI leadership says that it will approach the country's top court to seek acceptance of their mass resignations instead of the parliament, and will also dissolve the assemblies in Punjab and Khyber Pakhtunkhwa provinces.
Why we are dissolving our own governed assemblies in two key provinces of the country?
because the country is heading towards destruction under the rule of an imported government. The only way to save the country is to hold free, fair and transparent elections.
Amid political tug-of-war in the country, Pakistan's former PM Imran Khan announced last week that he would go to the parliament on Thursday to confirm the resignations of his party lawmakers and dissolve the Punjab and Khyber Pakhtunkhwa assemblies on 23rd of December. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
The Taliban officials on Tuesday ordered a nationwide ban on university education for Afghan women. Earlier, a letter made public by the spokesman for the Ministry of Higher Education, Ziaullah Hashimi, outlining that the measure would take effect immediately in private and public universities. Today, the Taliban forces barred women from entering Kabul University.
This piece of news was really disappointing. Last night, when I was told that the Taliban have ordered girls to be excluded from universities, I couldn't eat or sleep. After so many efforts and attending several classes in hope of making a bright future, they at once ruined everything. This order is very painful and unacceptable. It has to be reversed.
This was very shocking. Nowadays, we've been sitting our final test. Today, despite knowing that they wouldn't let us in, I rushed to the university. This is very difficult for an Afghan girl to comprehend the weight of being barred from getting education. So far, I've been worrying for my sisters who are banned from schools, and from now on, I should be concerned about my future too.
Afghan experts warn that the new order will have a devastating impact on the future of women as well as the entire Afghan nation. They urge the Taliban authorities to stop rolling back Afghan women's rights.
It is a catastrophic decision to ban women from universities. This can also be seen as a terrifying shock for Afghan society, especially the youth and women. It is so bitter and concerning. Previously, the explosion hit our girl students in tuition centers, but this devastating order is targeting the progress of a whole nation. The effects and consequences of this illogical order are unfortunate and irreparable in different arenas.
And it's difficult to imagine how a country can...
In addition to oppositions from inside Afghanistan, the United Nations and several countries have condemned the order. They have signaled that the Taliban administration won't get recognition until they equally observe the human rights of all Afghans. After taking power, the Taliban promised a softer role and upholding women's rights. But today, many here say that the Taliban have been failing to abide by their promises. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Japan has slowly developed the scope and scale of its military forces since its defeat in World War II, despite its pacifist constitution. Prime Minister Fumio Kishida Friday announced a major shift in its post-war self-defense principle.
When considering strengthening our defense capabilities this time, we will assume various situations and consider whether the current capabilities of self-defense forces can deter threats to Japan based on the capabilities of our opponents and new ways of fighting.
Outside the Japanese embassy in Seoul, South Korea, activists protested against Japan's new military plans. Japan ruled over Korea for much of the first half of the 20th century. Civic leaders argue Japan's force buildup, to include various U.S. missiles and counterstrike strategy, can enable its military to again become offensive in nature.
The Japanese government's so-called counterattack capability actually involves preemptively striking enemy bases in North Korea, China, and Russia with missiles. As a result, Japan's principle of self-defense is completely broken, and the peace constitution, its minimum responsibility as a war criminal state, remained empty.
Japan suggests it's responding to increasing threats from North Korea and China. Over the next 5 years, Japan plans to double its military spending from 1% to 2% of GDP. And much of that more than $300 billion is earmarked to be spent in America's military-industrial complex. Japan's new military budget comes just as the U.S. increases its annual military spending to $858 billion. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Iran's nuclear chief announced this week that the capacity of uranium enrichment in the country is now twice as high as the total volume produced since the onset of the nuclear industry in Iran. He made the remarks in an exhibition showcasing Iran's latest achievements in the nuclear sector.
We aim to generate 20% of the country's electricity from nuclear energy and the use of radiation technology.
This is one of the achievements Iran has publicized in recent days, which is viewed as a response to what Tehran describes as the West dilly-dallying on the revival of the 2015 deal. The pact has been in limbo since the U.S. walked out of it in 2018 and reinstated sanctions on Iran.
The Americans claim that the Vienna talks are no longer a priority for them amid the unrest in Iran. First of all, they have a role in engineering the riots. Secondly, they do want to resume the negotiations, but they are trying to use the unrest as a bargaining chip in the talks.
In October this year, Iran deployed more advanced centrifuges at its three enrichment facilities, increasing their total number to 4,000. The Atomic Energy Organization of Iran announced this week that it's now enriching uranium at a historic 60% rate using the new advanced centrifuges.
As hopes for the revival of the 2015 deal dwindle, Iran says it reserves its right to boost its nuclear energy program, which it says is clearly stipulated in the accord. The AEOI says it will not wait for the resumption of the Vienna talks and will continue to expand its nuclear activities for peaceful purposes. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Saudi coalition has seized another fuel ship bound for Yemen, keeping it from reaching the port of Hodeidah to unload the much-needed fuel. Military officials based in Sana'a confirmed that they have not ruled out the military option against the Saudi coalition in order to prevent what they call acts of piracy in the Red Sea.
I can confidently say that in the near future or in the days ahead, we will all witness an escalation of military operations, and perhaps we are going to see a one-of-a-kind military operation that will target the vessels in the Red Sea that are pirating Yemeni fuel ships which have received the necessary permits from the United Nations. The Yemeni army could also target the oil industry in both Saudi Arabia and the UAE. I can certainly assure you that the status quo is going to change, as military officials' strategic patience is wearing thin.
According to the spokesperson for the Yemeni Petroleum Company, Isam al-Mutawakkil, all Yemeni fuel ships are forced to sail on a path crossing near the Saudi Arabian coastal area of Jazan, where an American base is believed to be operating.
All Yemeni fuel ships bound for Yemen have been seized and fallen victim to these acts of piracy near the Saudi coastal area of Jizan, where they are searched under American supervision. This is happening despite the fact that they are already being inspected by Djibouti. Therefore, we should hold accountable the Saudi and American coalition along with the United Nations, which is allowing these acts of piracy that are causing great harm to the Yemeni people.
Yemeni military and political personnel have expressed that a peaceful solution will be impossible if the humanitarian situation continues to deteriorate due to a limited supply of fuel and diesel. Tensions are also on the rise in the strategic province of Hodeidah, where coalition forces are reportedly building up.
If there is not going to be a peaceful or political solution, then perhaps the solution is going to come through the barrel of our rifles in order to stop these aggressor nations which are taking orders from their American and Zionist masters.
As 2022 draws to an end, so do all efforts for a peaceful solution. However, as the humanitarian situation continues to grow worse by the day in Yemen, the military option could be the only option left on the table.
The Yemeni government based in the capital Sana'a has proved that it has the military capability to hit long-range targets in land and at sea. However, it is still keen to reach a political solution and end the conflict that has taken the lives of tens of thousands of innocent people. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Across the U.S. healthcare system, medical debt is taking a fearsome toll on patients, forcing more than half of adults with health-related debt to make difficult sacrifices, including taking on extra work, changing their living situation, or delaying their education. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truth Out wrote in this regard, a new report suggests most U.S. hospitals have policies to use legal action or other aggressive tactics against patients. Despite growing evidence of the harm caused by medical debt, hundreds of U.S. hospitals maintain policies to aggressively pursue patients for unpaid bills using tactics such as lawsuits, selling patient accounts to debt buyers, and reporting patients to credit rating agencies, a KHN investigation shows. The collection practices are commonplace among all types of hospitals in all regions of the U.S., including public university systems, leading academic institutions, small community hospitals, for-profit chains, and non-profit Catholic systems. Individual hospital systems have come under scrutiny in recent years for suing patients, but the KHN analysis shows the practice is widespread, suggesting most of the nation's approximately 5,100 hospitals serving the general public have policies to use legal action or other aggressive tactics against patients. And although industry officials say they are careful about how they target patients for unpaid bills, few institutions have renounced what federal rules call extraordinary collection actions, even as medical debt forces millions of Americans to cut back on food and other essentials, drain retirement savings, and make other difficult sacrifices. At the same time, a majority of hospitals scrutinized by KHN effectively shroud their collection activities, publicly posting incomplete or, in many cases, no information about what can happen to patients if they can't pay. There are among the findings many things of an examination of billing and financial aid at a diverse sample of 528 hospitals across the U.S. Over the past year, KHN investigated each of these hospitals, reviewing thousands of pages of policies and other documents. The reporting also included thousands of telephone and email inquiries and interviews to obtain and clarify how hospitals handle patients with unpaid bills. Some hospitals did not respond to multiple requests for information, but KHN was able to gather details about most. From them, a picture emerges of a minefield for patients where a trip to the hospital can not only produce jaw-dropping bills, but also expose patients to legal risks that jeopardize their livelihood. Among the findings, more than two-thirds sue patients or take other legal action against them, such as garnishing wages or placing liens on property. A similar share of the hospitals report patients with outstanding bills to credit rating agencies, putting patients' credit scores and their ability to rent an apartment, buy a car, or get a job at risk. A quarter sell patient debts to debt collectors, who in turn can pursue patients for years for unpaid bills. About 1 in 5 deny non-emergency care to people with outstanding debt. And nearly 40% of all hospitals researched make no information available on their websites about their collection activities, although KHN in some cases was able to obtain the information through repeated requests. Across the U.S. healthcare system, medical debt is taking a fearsome toll on patients, forcing more than half of adults with health-related debt to make difficult sacrifices, including taking on extra work, changing their living situation, or delaying their education. A KFF poll conducted for this project has found. Basit Maligan was a freshman at Lafayette College in Pennsylvania when a heart attack caused by a previously undetected birth defect landed him in a hospital. Because his insurance had lapsed, Baligan, whose family is from Nigeria, was hit with bills amounting to tens of thousands of dollars. When he couldn't pay, the hospital reported him to a credit agency, which he discovered only after he'd graduated and was trying to rent an apartment in New York City. He said, "I kept getting rejected and rejected. I was desperate." Maligan, a prize-winning student, landed a job at banking giant Goldman Sachs and used his signing bonus to begin paying down the debt. 5 years later, he is still making payments. Now, Maligan said he thinks twice before going to the doctor. Nick and Elizabeth Woodruff also had their faith shaken by hospital debt collectors. Nick was sued by Lady of Lawrence Memorial Hospital in New York, where he had received care for a dangerous foot infection. Despite having insurance through Nick's work at a truck dealership, the couple were buried in bills, forcing them to withdraw money from their retirement accounts and borrow from family. When they still couldn't make all the payments, the hospital, an institution owned by Chain, took them to court, and in 2018, they were ordered to pay more than $9,300. This hospital boasts values and states they take pride in their charity work, said Elizabeth, a social worker, adding, "But I am taken aback by how callous they have been." NPR also reported an investigation of more than 500 U.S. hospitals showed that many use aggressive practices to collect on unpaid medical bills. More than two-thirds have policies that allow them to sue patients or take other legal actions against them, such as garnishing wages. Despite growing evidence of the harm caused by medical debt, hundreds of U.S. hospitals maintain policies to aggressively pursue patients for unpaid bills using tactics such as lawsuits, selling patient accounts to debt buyers, and reporting patients to credit rating agencies, KHN investigation has shown. The collection practices are commonplace among all types of hospitals in all regions of the U.S., including public university systems, leading academic institutions, small community hospitals, for-profit chains, and non-profit Catholic systems. Individual hospital systems have come under scrutiny in recent years for suing patients, but KHN analysis shows the practice is widespread across the United States of America, suggesting most of the nation's approximately 5,100 hospitals serving the general public have policies to use legal action or other aggressive tactics against patients.
که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah. Allahu ya Allah walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illa Allah. Allahu ya Allah wallahu akbar.
Imam Khomeini's viewpoint on condition of leadership. The necessary conditions to be available in a leader are directly connected to the nature of the Islamic government. Disregarding the general conditions like wisdom and proper management, two basic conditions, that means justice and to know the law, should also be available. Even after the demise of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, when the bitter controversy about who would succeed him appeared, there was no theoretical dispute among Muslims over such an issue that his successor should be a knowledgeable and virtuous man.
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Welcome to a new episode of Spring of the Truth from IRIB English Radio. This is Zainab Musavi, and in this program we try to have a profound reading of Imam Khomeini's precious words and speeches. About the subject of self and spirituality, Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh says that the most dangerous enemy of human being is the self. No other enemy is more detrimental than this enemy. So today we will talk about the self and its flexibility in being good or evil. The Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said that أعدى عدوك نفسك التي بين جنبيك, which means that the most dangerous enemy of you is the self behind you. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam by this sentence intends to refer to nafs al-ammara. Nafs al-ammara refers to the nafs which is rolling over the self. This means that this nafs commands us and tells us what to do. So when this nafs has any desire or appetite, nafs al-ammara simply commands and dominates it. This is the first type of nafs out of the three, and the worst of it, of course. The other two nafses are nafs al-lawama and nafs al-mutma'inna, which are self-reproach and serenity, and are helpful in the elevation of the soul.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi, sallallahu alayhi.
Okay, dear audience, welcome back. You're listening to Spring of the Truth. We're talking about the self, or what is called in Arabic as nafs, and nafs al-ammara, which is highly reproached by the Islamic figures. The subject of Imam Khomeini's self, however, is nafs al-ammara. And the signs of following such a nafs or self are that the person who has this type of nafs commits sins willingly, blatantly, remorsely, and in any way that they want. Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh is in fact referring to this nafs as the most dangerous enemy and the most destructive factor in a person's failure. This is very important for us as the lovers and followers of Imam Khomeini's school of thought to take his advice serious and make use of them in our personal and social life.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Ruh al-Ali Khomeini, 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 Khomeini,
every night and every day. Never forget to say La ilaha
The Limelight.
French President Emmanuel Macron suggests that Europe should gain more autonomy on technology and defense capabilities from the US. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT wrote in this regard, the countries should bolster their own defense to become less dependent on both the Bloc and Washington, the French president has said. French President Emmanuel Macron has said European NATO members should become more autonomous and less dependent on the US-led alliance regarding their own security. He made the remarks recently as he spoke to reporters in Paris after returning from a summit in Amman, Jordan. Macron said, an alliance isn't something I should depend on. It's something that I should choose, something I work with. We must rethink our strategic autonomy. Macron identified technology and defense capabilities as areas in which European nations should seek to reduce their dependence on the alliance and the US in particular. He added, however, that member states should not endeavor to break away from the bloc or develop an alternative to it. Macron said, there is no European security architecture without a strategic autonomy inside NATO and with NATO, but not dependent on NATO. Macron also touched upon the ongoing hostilities between the Eastern European countries, in which the latter has received wide-ranging Western support, while reiterating his support for the absolute defense of Ukraine. He said once again that Moscow's security concerns should be also addressed. When I speak of guarantees, I'm talking about all of these countries, for us, but also for Russia, Macron stated, adding, this means that one of the essential points we must address, as President Putin has always said, is the fear that NATO comes right up to its doors and the deployment of weapons that could threaten Russia. In recent weeks, the French president has repeatedly said that the conflict must eventually end with negotiations, which should yield security guarantees for everyone, including Russia. This stance triggered a barrage of criticism from Ukraine and some EU nations, with Poland, Slovakia, and the Baltic states openly opposing Macron's suggestion. Russia has signaled on several occasions that it is ready to talk with Ukraine and the West as a whole, while insisting that its own interests must be taken into account if negotiations are to occur. Moscow has blamed the lack of diplomatic efforts to end the conflict on Kiev. Recently, the head of Russia's Federation Council, Valentina Matvienko, said there is no background for negotiations to take place in the near future. There is nothing to discuss and with no one. Senior officials in Kiev have repeatedly issued belligerent statements, with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky pledging to recapture the former Ukrainian regions of Donetsk, Lugansk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia, which joined Russia in early October, as well as Crimea, which broke away from Kiev in 2014. Zelensky has even banned himself from negotiating with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Al-Mayad in English also wrote, on his way back from an international summit in Amman, Jordan, Emmanuel Macron told reporters that he doesn't see his push to develop European defense as an alternative to NATO, according to the Wall Street Journal. Macron says that a stronger Europe would allow the continent to become more autonomous within the military alliance, acting inside NATO with NATO, but also not depending on NATO. An alliance isn't something I should depend on, it's something that I should choose, something I work with, the Daily quoted Macron as saying, we must rethink our strategic autonomy. He said that Europe needs to gain more autonomy in technology and defense capabilities, including from the US. The remarks came in the wake of Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky's meeting with US President Joe Biden in Washington and addressing Congress and calling their money not charity but an investment. Recently, the United States announced that it will provide an additional $1.85 billion in military assistance for Ukraine, with the assistance consisting of Patriot air defense systems, according to U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. $1.85 billion in additional U.S. military assistance, including the first transfer of Patriot air defense system, Blinken said in a press release. This decision comes right after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky arrived to the White House to meet U.S. President Joe Biden. The Pentagon announced recently that one Patriot air defense system, additional ammunition for high-mobility artillery rocket systems, HIMARS, high-speed anti-radiation missiles, AHRMS, among other military hardware, are included in the recently announced $1.85 billion U.S. package for Ukraine.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.